We left off, I believe, last week talking about the prohibition of eating and drinking before davening. I actually have some modifications to the Makoro sheet, so I'm going to have to share them with you. I'll share my screen in a moment. But the last thing we had, I think, been discussing was that it's permissible to drink water before, and then with the machlokas, whether it's permissible even on Shabbos or not, because you haven't made Kiddush yet, and we paskin that before you daven Shachris, since you can't make Kiddush, so you're allowed to drink water, but after we daven Shachris, so then you're not allowed to drink water till you make Kiddush. So we were exploring a little bit just the quote, the Shulchan Aruch, and I quoted the wrong passage in the Shulchan Aruch, so I'm going to share the right one now. And I wanted to talk a little bit about a perhaps more important thing to many people. What about coffee before davening in the morning? For those amongst you might be coffee drinkers or tea drinkers, and you needed to get your day started, what is the halacha there? So firstly, I don't know if we read it, I'll reread it. The Rambam in source number 5, which I'm sharing my screen, is Asal Adam Shiyutom Klum, the Rambam says that you're not allowed to eat anything or to do malacha. Malacha here doesn't mean turning on a light. It doesn't mean the lametes malacha shabbos. It means being engaged in work. You walk into a room, you can flip the light switch on. So you're not allowed to do that till you daven shachris. V'chein lo yashkim lepesach chaveiro lishal b'shlomo kodjem shiyispal tefila shachris. It's not appropriate to, for the moment, let's say, go out of your way to your neighbor's apartment or house and to greet the person. V'lo yetzi b'derech kodjem shiyispal. You're not supposed to depart on a journey before you daven. Aval toim v'osem malacha kodjem shiyispal amusuf v'kodjem mincha. Aval enu soeid samach mincha. You're allowed to have a little bit to eat if you haven't davened musaf yet or before mincha, and you could engage in malacha, but you're not allowed to start a meal if it's within a half an hour of, let's say, for the moment, mincha katana. If it's already the end of the ninth hour of the day, then you have to daven mincha before engaging in a real seuda. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, the truth is, as the Aruch HaShulchan points out, according to the Rambam, it sounds like you couldn't even drink water before davening, because the Rambam says, Asur lo la'adam sheyiton klum, but that isn't the way we paskin. So in Shulchan Aruch, and this source number 6 is a replacement for the previous 6. It's the same simon, but it was the wrong seifim in Shulchan Aruch. The Mechaber writes that Osir lo lehisasek bitzrachav o leilech lederech ad sheyispal tfilas yudches. Okay, so you're not supposed to do those things. You're not supposed to engage in your personal needs or to start your journey. V'yesh mekilim, the Ramah says, la'achar sha'amru miktsas brachos, kodem sha'amru bar sha'amar, v'tov la'achmer b'zeh. We would say that if a person has to go somewhere, has to travel, they should at least say brachos first. Then the Mechaber continues, v'lo lecho v'lo lishtos, you're not allowed to eat or drink. Avol mayim mutar lishtos kodun tfila, you are allowed to drink water, bein b'chol bein b'shabes b'yom tov. As long as you haven't daven shachos, you can drink water. V'chein, Ochlin umashkin l'refua mutter. If you are consuming things for the purposes of healing, as opposed to for the purposes of something that you would enjoy, it's permissible. So perhaps if you are an athlete who's engaged in a workout and you need to have a protein shake afterwards to help your body rebuild the damage, so that would probably fall under the category of refua. Then the Shulchan Aruch continues.
Rabbi Weider.
Yes.
Rabbi Weider.
Yes.
But how are you allowed to get up and exercise before davening if you can't even greet a friend?
The answer is before Amud HaShachar. And you started before and you finished running as the dawn broke.
Thank you.
And Sif Dalid, Hatsame Bahare Raiv, someone who is really thirsty, really hungry. Arehim Bechlala Cholim, they're like sick people. Um Yeshbo Yecholes Lechavein Dato, if a person is able to concentrate in their davening without eating or drinking. Yispalo, they should daven first without eating or drinking. V'im lav, if not, imratza al yispalel al shiyocha v'yishteh. Now here, it's a very interesting formulation of the Mechaber. He says that if you're not able to concentrate on your davening, then if you want, you can wait to daven until you eat or drink something so you're able to focus. That's a very strange thing because you would think that if you're not able to focus, then it shouldn't be if you want, you should wait to daven. It should be you have to wait to daven and to eat or drink. Whereas if you can concentrate without it, so then you have to daven first. If you can't concentrate without it, to daven properly, you should have to eat or drink. Now, the reason why he formulates it this way, however, is because of something he writes in the Beis Yosef, which is source number 7 right below. Mechaber writes, Kosef HaRamba Meperek Hei Mehilchos Tfila, Hatzamei V'Horaev Harehin Bechlau Cholim. Just as the Mechaber quoted, Im Yesh Bo Yecholas L'Chaven Estato Yispalo, V'im Lav Al Yispal Ad Sheyochal V'Yishta. For the Rambam, he doesn't qualify that. The Rambam says, if you can concentrate, you must daven first. If you can't concentrate, you're not allowed to daven first. But Ulafima Shekosav Rabbeinu B'Simen Tzadi Ches B'Shem HaRam, what the Torah quotes earlier in Or HaChaim, later, Dechol She'in Dato Miyoshev Esalav Lo Yispalel, the halacha is that if you can't focus, if your mind is not settled, if you're agitated and you can't focus, you shouldn't daven until, of course, you should achieve focus. So later, the Torah writes, She'in Anu Zhar Ata B'chol Zeh. We're not machbir on this. L'fisha ein anu mechavnin kol kach b'tfila. Because we don't have so much kavanah in the first place. So in a certain sense, to say that I'm not focused yet, I can't daven. So let's say I'm not going to be able to focus at all this morning. So I'm not going to daven at all this morning. That would imply a certain kind of yuara, a certain kind of presumptuousness that I'm normally capable of having such kavanah. And now I can't. So now I'm pata from davening because I just can't concentrate. So unfortunately for us, although fortunately for the fact that we do end up davening more, we don't always have so much kavanah. A lot of our time, our tefillah, is what we call mitzvah sanashim melumada. It's a little bit by rote, not an ideal, but that's the reality. And it's not a new reality. I think I've mentioned this before. Rabbi Yochanan in the Yerushalmi says that he gives thanks to his head because when he gets to modem, it bows. It's not a new reality. So the Mechaber, the Beis Yosef now says, Efshar, if that's the case, the haninami is pal of achakach yochemishtu. Okay, you're hungry and you're thirsty, so you're laughing. Oh, you're not going to concentrate so much? Guess what? After you eat and drink, you're also not going to concentrate so much. So why bother? But he says, umihu, imratsu hatsame varayv lismel chatevi aramamzal harishos biyadam. So in a kind of funny way, Beis Yosef says, okay, but if you want to follow the Rambam in this regard, then you can eat and drink first before davening. So that's why in Shulchan Aruch, as opposed to the Rambam, who says that if you can't concentrate right now, you're not allowed to daven right now. You have to eat and drink first. So that's why in Shulchan Aruch, he formulates it, Imrasa al yispalo, because really you shouldn't eat or drink before, even though you're not going to have kavanah, because you're not going to have kavanah anyway. So, okay, but if you want to eat or drink, then you can follow the Rambam and eat or drink and then daven. Okay. Now, The last two sources I wanted to look at are the ones that are probably very practical, as I mentioned before, for a lot of people. Personally, I'm not really a coffee or a tea drinker, but I know there are people who it is not uncommon for me to be walking to shul on Shabbos, and you see the person with his, you know, his hot cup with his coffee in it, because in order to wake up, the person absolutely needs their coffee fix. So the question is that mutter before davening or not? So the Mishnah Brura, and I've actually chosen two sources here because I think this is a wonderful example of the difference between the Mishnah Brura and the Aruch HaShulchan. And I think it's worth commenting. There are some people who think that the Aruch HaShulchan is wonderful because the Aruch HaShulchan is a mekel and the Mishnah Brura is a machmer. That's not actually true. I mean, it may be statistically true, but the Aruch HaShulchan is not actually a mekel. The Aruch HaShulchan is just a consistent defender of Minog Yisrael. So whereas the Mishnah Brura will simply read the sources, and the sources say A, B, or C, the Aruch HaShulchan will read the sources that say A, B, or C. But if the Minog Yisrael is not that way, and it more often comes in with when the Minog Yisrael is to be lenient, so the Aruch HaShulchan will try to explain why it's really mutter, why those sources aren't correct, why we don't follow those sources, and so on. This is really the hallmark between, I think, what one would describe the classic mode of Psak Halacha, certainly in Ashkenaz and probably, you know, from the time of the Ramban and onward in Spain, probably as well, in many cases, not all cases, and this is a whole topic in its own right, of defending the, let's say, a long-established practice of the Jewish community, assuming that the community is not, you know, on a large scale violating halacha, therefore it must be mutter. So the Aruch HaShulchan very much is part of that tradition. The Mishnah Berurah marks a move away from that tradition and into a trend that you'll see. It's very much the Chazon Ish is very much in that mold. And something which in some circles for some issues is very popular today, which is you don't look at the minhag, you look at what the books say. That's not classically how halacha was done. And minhag Yisrael often, the minhag of the community usually had a fair degree of weight, not in every case, but in a large number of cases. So here, let's take what the Mishnah Berurah writes first.
The Chazon Ish is more machmir.
The truth is, the Chazon Ish was, my sense is very much also like the Mishnah Berurah in terms of what the sources say, except that my sense is the Chazon Ish could sometimes come up with wild kulas as well, occasionally. Whereas that Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah, not so much. The Mishnah Berurah tends to lean in the direction of reading this farm and trying to be machmir as much as possible to be yotzei ol shitos. Whereas the Chazon Ish, my sense is, I'm not a baki in Chazon Ish. My sense in the Chazon Ish is, he's much more like, and that's, he has a lot of, probably more chumers than kulas, but he's a very sort of independent thinker. And the way that the Mishnah Berurah is really just being malakit, he's just collecting and sort of adding up the chumers. So my sense is the Chazon Ish was probably less concerned with what the practice, the minhag is, or we say puk chazi mayim adavar, in the same way, you know, maybe even more so than the Mishnah Berurah. Whereas the Aruch HaShulchan places enormous weight in terms of what the communal practice is. Again, it's not true in every case. When the Aruch HaShulchan, you know, probably one of those famous cases, when he talks about married women not covering their hair, so the Aruch HaShulchan is mekel in terms of Kriya Shema and Brachos and so on, that we're not worried about reading Kriya Shema, you know, when a woman's hair is uncovered, etc., as the Gemara has, as the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch has. But he does describe it, Uvavon Oseinu Harabim. He doesn't say it's mutter for the woman not to cover their hair. He just says, once this is so common, it doesn't create a problem in terms of Kriya Shema Brachas. So the Aruch HaShulchan does not always put his stamp of approval on Minhag Yisrael. Now, part of the difference may be is that was a minhag that developed in the, or that was a practice, I don't know what to call it, that developed in the Aruch HaShulchan's lifetime probably. And so therefore, it wasn't like this was something that had been practiced for generations that he was willing to sort of put his approval on it. But Derech Klal, that's the pattern the Aruch HaShulchan tends to follow. And again, I think that was classically, that was the standard approach in Ashkenaz, at least beginning with the Balei HaTosas, which was to defend and rationalize communal practice. So the Mishnah Berurah writes, source number 8, Mayim Mutar. He says, the Lo Shayach Behu Gaiva. Gaiva is not relevant. You're drinking water. But Vidafka, below sugar. Avalam sugar asr. Now, I don't know. I mean, guess maybe some people drink sugar water. Some would say that's what we call soda. But to add a little sugar to your water to make it sweet, that's not a code. But kosher kein mashke shechar, in parentheses, shekar and beer, vaday asr. It should be asr for another reason to drink beer before you daven, because then al pidin, you're not supposed to daven either. The tea, the coffee, mutar lishtoso kodam tvila, kadesh yuchal lachavein data ul hispala. You're allowed to drink tea or coffee before so that you're able to concentrate. Especially in the places where people are habituated with tea or coffee, and they can't focus without it. Translate caffeine. Below sugar, that's what he quotes from the Achronim. But he says, sugar. So he says the minhag is people who drink it with sugar. But he says, "V'efsher de kavanas ha'achronim v'chein haradvash akasav de'im sugar ein l'cha gaiva gedola mizo kodem atfila." I'm not sure why, but this must be sociological. So they say there's no greater gaiva than drinking with sugar. Rakim nosein ha'sugar betoch hati lemasko. Only if you're putting the sugar in the tea to sweeten it. V'zeu aser kodem tefila. Avon lokeach ma'at sugar befib. So you put a sugar cube in your mouth. Be'es ha'shisiyah. When you're drinking the tea, ubilti ze ein yachal lishtos ha'tea, ein ze bechlal gaiva. I'm not really a tea drinker, but this seems a little strange to me. Putting a tea, it will to the Aruch HaShulchan as well. Putting a sugar cube in your mouth and drinking the tea that way, as opposed to putting the sugar in your tea, as I presume, maybe there are tea drinkers here who will tell me otherwise, is the exact same thing with the exact same purpose. It's probably just a little easier just to put the sugar in your tea, but okay, and it's not my...
Rabbi, I'm interrupting, I'm sorry. No, my Zaidi, my Saba, originally from Warsaw, Poland. And also a lot of people that I knew, in, like Hasidic people, they had cubes of tea, cubes of sugar, and that's how they drank their tea, with a cube between their teeth, and they sucked the hot tea through it.
My father's father also never drank tea without a sugar cube in his mouth.
Okay, I guess that's just a different way of doing it. I don't know. So, as I said, I'm no expert in this. Why there should be any distinction, I don't know. But at least I understand why now the Mishnah Berurah might actually have thought that both enough were common practices that you could make such a chiluk. So he says, Hayotze midvarenu, demimisinas ha-sugar betoch ha-ti, olecho ma'at mine targima be'es ha-shasia, to have a little bit of food, like a crackers or something with the tea, kidei shelo lishtos ha-ti ve'kofi aliba reikana, not to drink it on, an empty heart, we would call it an empty stomach, ein shum tzad lahakel bazeh kodem ha-tfil, there's no basis of being makel, imlo mishayeshlo chalishas ha-lev u'tzarech zeh l'refuah. Unless someone really is incapable, and this is like refuah. Umikom makom tov sheyomar mitchila kolpanim parshas Shema Yisrael. Okay, so better. There's a reason for this, because in our Gemara, if you remember, we mentioned this last week when the Gemara quotes the second drasha of Osi hishlachta achre gavecha al tikri gavecha ela geecha, your pride, your arrogance. Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu la'acha shenisga ezeh. After he's become proud, so based upon that, there was a suggestion that maybe part of the problem is not just tefillah, but kriya shema as well. So tefillah, you're going to have to concentrate on. You can't until you have your coffee or your tea. But at least you could just read kriya shema, so at least you avoid sort of the second half of the Gemara. So better, you don't have to, but he says it's better to do it that way. The most interesting sociological part actually comes next. Kosa b'sefer... I'm not sure if that's the Pischei Tshuva Chadash, because I'm not sure. I don't have at least that of an Arachayim. But whatever it is, maybe it's Pischei Tshuva. The Yesh Lemnoa Milishtos Hati Baboker Kodem Atfila Basifas Chaverim Ayin Sham Taimo. So this is very interesting. This is not my expertise, but my wife teaches a course about coffee and the formation of modernity. And tea is a similar drink as well, which makes its way into Europe probably in the early modern period. And it has a very, very significant formative impact upon society. And you have people who gather together in groups. Like today, people, you don't have a coffee house the way they used to have a coffee house. Now people go to Starbucks and they often plug in with their computer. So even though they're in the coffee house, they're in their own world. But once upon a time, a coffee house was a place of gathering. The coffee was almost incidental to the way people would gather there. So that's what he's describing here. And this, they would drink, in this case, tea. But so basically you would go to the chevra, would go hang out before davening. So this sefer says, whatever it is, Pischei Tshuva says that you should refrain from such practice. In addition to the fact that you're gathering socially and drinking tea before you're davening, another issue will emerge. The reason why you're not allowed to engage in your business before you daven is you shouldn't be focused on anything else other than davening is first thing. So aside from the question of drinking, what are they doing at the coffee house? They're busy discussing the latest presidential debate, the various politics, et cetera, et cetera. So that's inappropriate, because you shouldn't be focused on anything once the time of davening comes until you daven. You're not supposed to get bogged down in other things until you daven. And in addition, people who end up gathering together, you know, they get so caught up in their conversation, so they wind up missing Zman Kriya Shema Tefillah. The halacha here to me is not as interesting as the sociological phenomenon. I say Baruch Hashem, I don't want to say Nisgadlu Hadoros, but most of the time I sense that people gather together before davening that I've seen is for the Daf Yomi or to learn. I don't know, I could be wrong, but I don't know if people are going to Starbucks and a Chevra before davening. So in that way, Achshu Dare, as they would say. And it's nice to see when people gather together to learn before davening. Tzorchei mitzvah is considered okay. All right.
Well, reader.
Yes.
But it does sound like you shouldn't really check the newspaper before davening.
Yep. Yeah. Once Moda Shachar, unless you want to get up really, really early, let me say one thing. One of the things that has to be, I think, considered in this context, and it's discussed elsewhere in Shulchan Aruch, is what is the din when you have a minyan kavua, when you're not going to daven until a certain time. So I will tell you that my sense is that eating and drinking and maybe going to greet someone, we consider prohibited even if you're davening later. But if you get up early in the morning and you're davening and the minyan is at 8 o'clock, and that's when, let's say you weren't going to daven vasikin anyway. So ideally, certainly you should be davening with the minyan. No one's going to say that you should waste all that time in the morning. And I'm not sure anybody would say that you're only allowed to learn a time in the morning, right? It would mean that if a person is, let's say during the pandemic, is davening biyichidus, so then it means that if you get up after Amora Shachar, you shouldn't read the newspaper before, you shouldn't look at the news until you've davened. If you're in a situation where you can't daven until later, so then again, I think the practice is we don't eat or drink, but I don't think that we frown upon other kinds of activities that would be generally considered productive, but it happens to be before tefillah.
Rabbi Weider?
Yes, Marshall.
If you're interested, it sounds like you are, in the sociology, there's a book called Rabbinic Questions by Matt Goldish that actually takes a huge slug of tshuvas, looks only at the shilas, and uses those to learn and darshan out a huge number of sociological metzias about 17th century Judaism that is not otherwise easily figure outable, because everybody runs right to the tshuvas, but they don't look at the questions to see, which often lay out for several pages, what was going on in society. So very interesting analytic approach.
Okay. Yes, but this is a whole, it's just a subset of an entire literature of using response in various periods to shed light. And yes, the questions are often more interesting than the answers. Okay. So now I wanted to just take a look at the Aruch HaShulchan quickly, because he's dealing with the same issues, but you can tell that his slant is a little bit different. He writes, Asur Lechol Alishta, source number 9, Kodem HaTfila, Vakach Amru Chazal, Lo sochlu adam, lo sochlu kodem she tispalulu al bimchan. B'chol ha'ocho b'shose ve'achar kach mispalel, alav ha'kosav omer ve'osi hishlach ta'acharei gavecha, al tikri gavecha ela ge'echa. Omer ha'kadosh baruch hu la'achar she nisko'e ze, kibel alav malchus shamayim. That's the Gemara he's quoting straight as we have it. B'kosfu ator v'ashulchan aruch, demayim mutor lishtos kodem ha'tfila, demayim lo shayech gaiva. So water you're allowed to drink. Umutar bein b'chol bein b'shabes v'yomtov. The afal gav, the kodem kiddush aser letom mikom akom kodem atfila before you've daven shachar shabbos morning. Lo chayil alav adayin chovas kiddush. There's no obligation to make kiddush. You can't yet. The chayin aser harash lemaisa kemosha kosov hator v'kach kosov hagos maimonios ve'od gedolim. Now v'taimon the chayvan shedarshu chazal ge'echa lo shayach zebemayim the ein kain gaiva. That's how they understood. Avol mi divrei haRambam shekasuv aser litom. The Rambam that we read earlier says you cannot literally taste anything. Mashma deshum teima aser. You cannot taste, eat, or drink anything. Avol rov rabosenu lo sviralan kain. V'chein haminag pashtut lishtos mayim chayim mayim chamim im esef shekorim ti kodem atfila. So he says that. That the minog is that we drink before we drink water, and the widespread minog is to drink tea. The alpirov moel linikius kiyodua. I don't know what he means by nikius there exactly, but it's useful for whatever that reason is. V'yesh asu lishtos im sugar, v'eni yodea hatam. I don't know why. The atu shem achila yesh bazeh. That's not called achila. V'areina ela lahatim esachamin ktsas. It's just to make the tea more drinkable. V'yesh shehitiru lishtos im sugar kesha sugar befiv avalatila bechamin velasos mayim misukim is aser. That's the Mishnah Berurah. V'eino ikar. He doesn't think it's correct. Avalim cholov with milk or cream Nirali the Asur, the Chalav Masbiya. So this is very interesting. He's arguing that the definition of Achila and Shtiyah that's prohibited is something that sates you. And water and sugar don't sate you, but the presumably the fat in the milk has the effect. The ode, another reason why you shouldn't put milk in, is the Bami Dam. Now this is really interesting. This is ancient anatomy. It was still held by Da Vinci. I don't know if we've ever encountered this, but the Gemara in Bechoros presents two theories to explain the following issue, which is why it's strange. It's not a strange question. Why is it that women who are nursing do not menstruate? We would say women who are nursing intensively tend not to menstruate. So there were two biological theories. One of them is that dam nechar v'naseis chalav, that the milk, that the blood that normally would have been menstrual blood, it was nechar, it became cloudy, and it turned into milk, which raises important questions about the permissibility of drinking milk, which we know is mutter, because if it's dam nechar v'naseis chalav, why isn't that a problem? I'm not going to go into that question now. But lest this biological theory seems strange to you, there's another one, but not relevant for our purposes. It has nafkaminas and hilchos nid at least. Lest this seems strange to you, as has been pointed out by Professor Shlomo Sternberg of Harvard, the mathematician, if you look at Da Vinci's drawings of the human anatomy, the female anatomy, there is a large blood vessel connecting the uterus to the mammary glands. In other words, this belief of, and this was before they knew, but before Harvey explained what the heart does and the circulation of blood. So they actually, this was a standard theory as to explaining this particular biological phenomenon. The answer, the explanation is dam necha v'naseis chalav. The milk is blood that turned cloudy. And this being the case, the Aruch HaShulchan says, again, this theory is, I don't think, I should never say nobody, because I'm sure there's somebody in some very hermetically sealed community who still subscribes to this theory and rejects modern science. I don't think anybody takes this seriously anymore. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, since really Chalav comes from Dam, and the reason why you're not allowed to eat before you daven is because you have to be mispalel al yerdam. V'shayach bezeh kodem shetispalelu al dimchem. Therefore, one shouldn't put milk into it. But the Aruch HaShulchan says, v'olam noagim heter gam becholav l'fi she'eno ba ela lahatim hamayim. The purpose of the milk is to take off the edge from the tea, and the gam coffee mutter lishtos. Afagav the nearer the coffee maspia. I'm not sure. Again, I can't, as a non-coffee drinker, I can't make that evaluation. Mikomakom kasvu hagedolim dimutter. So you see, the Aruch HaShulchan just says it's mutter to do so. You want to have your coffee. You need your coffee in the morning before you go to shul. You need to put a little sugar in it to be able to drink it, or to put some cream into it. So the gedolim say it's mutter. The Mishnah Berurah found gedolim said it's aser. But this is the Aruch HaShulchan here is reflecting the fact that this was in fact a common practice. And then
Rabbi, the Aruch HaShulchan lived 140, 150 years ago. I mean, in other cases, he knew the science of the day. I mean, this has been disproven a long time ago, way before 1880, 1890 when he lived.
No, I understand, but let me put it to you this way. I think that on issues that were of practical import, probably more modern science seeped into Eastern Europe. I think on issues that were more theoretical, right? This is fundamentally a theoretical question, right? This is not prescribing that whether dam nechar v'naseis chalav, or whether you go with the other theory, which is closer to what we would say. Either way, it's not a practical issue. It's theoretically has a nafkamina in laws of nida, even though it really doesn't come up anyway. It's just not that significant. So because it's only a theoretical construct, or it's a theory to explain a non-disputed phenomenon, so it doesn't really matter. So I'm not really sure how much reached the Aruch HaShulchan. I suspect that when you talk about cures, Talmudic cures that didn't work, And the modern cures, that's the kind of thing that more, because there's lemaisa, that's the kind of thing that I think would have penetrated far more. But this is just the theory. So he's saying in the context of should you put milk in it? Well, milk is kind of like dam, and you have mispala, mm-hmm. your dam. Now, did he not know at all about the actual, you know, contemporary science in this matter? I don't know, but it doesn't sound like it. But I don't think it precludes his knowledge in other areas. So he concludes by stating, v'yesh listapik, two lines from the bottom and middle of the line, im mutar lishtos meimei seltzin, I'm guessing that that's seltzer, I'm not sure, or it looks like lemonade, k'she'eno shose l'refua, if he's not drinking it for refua purposes, the l'refua pshita shemutar k'moshin yisbar. V'nira, then he writes, she'ein chiluk bein stam mayim, l'mayim elu, which is kind of interesting. In other words, if you can drink a beverage, you can't eat solid foods, but you're allowed to drink a beverage, your beverage of your choice before davening, according to the Aruch HaShulchan. Now, he seems to take this, going far beyond the Mishnah Berurah, that shtia is mutter. He doesn't talk about beer, but as I said before, beer is a problem for other reasons, because once you drink a glass of beer, you're not supposed to daven probably for a certain amount of time. But the Aruch HaShulchan here, as you can see, very strongly defends, or simply, I should say, not strongly, simply defends the practice, the Minhag Yisrael, which was to drink these kind of things before davening, even though they weren't simply water. Okay, so thus, according to the Aruch HaShulchan, who may certainly be relied upon, you can drink your coffee and your tea in the morning and put in whatever you put into it, because that's already long-standing practice. Okay,
fine. Rabbi Wiener?
Yes.
What about the fact, taking one step backwards, that in fact, people who drink coffee in general have, in fact, addicted themselves to a drug? And maybe that's just like utter the halacha, period.
I would jokingly say, but I know it's not a fair analogy, but we're also kind of addicted to food. And this is a Pandora's box I'm not going to open, but I will say I'll say two things. Number one, just because I want to have fun with it. Number one, I'm not a coffee drinker personally, and I have chosen not to drink coffee even when tempted at times, precisely because I don't want to be addicted. And the primary concern there is for fast days. Although there are very simple solutions around it, which now they make Tylenol with caffeine, and you could just swallow it, which is not a problem on a fast day, even Yom Kippur, and that solves your problem with the caffeine. But I've personally chosen not to go down that road. As I've gotten older, I wonder whether it's a good choice or not, but nonetheless, that's a choice. So in that sense, I would, yes, Aaron, I see. I know you can live without food. That's why I said it tongue in cheek. But I would say that given that there do not seem to be any real downsides to people drinking coffee, it's not clear that there are great health benefits either. I find it hard to categorize that as usher to do so. I would add the second comment I want to make, and it's relevant to Parshas HaShavua, and it's a question I am starting to think a lot more about, is that the halachic system has trouble relating to individual actions which themselves are innocuous, but in the cumulative become problematic. I'll take, for example, the issue of smoking. Is it also to smoke one cigarette? If you're only going to smoke one cigarette, let's say Leo and Avi come and told you, Marshall, you will not get addicted by smoking this one cigarette. And you're curious, what is it like for people? You know, what is the experience? You just want to know what the experience is. Is it mut or is it also? Now, it's hard. The question is, on what grounds would you say that it's also? You could construct an argument, even one cigarette, you know, there's a certain amount of exposure smoke in the lungs, does minor damage, very minor damage, maybe your body will repair it quickly, but maybe it's a form of chavalah. It's on shaky grounds when you argue from a strictly halachic perspective. So then the question is, if I'm allowed to smoke one cigarette, well, I could smoke two, is not going to kill me either, and three won't kill me. But if I become addicted, then I have to smoke more. Which one is the smoke, is the cigarette that's also? And by the way, you could raise the same question. I know it's not the same, but I'll get pushback. Or drinking Coca-Cola, right? Drinking Coca-Cola once is not going to do any terrible harm to you. But the effects of, and sugar is addictive, the effects over time are we know they're very damaging. It's relevant not just to the individual, it's relevant to the issues of environmental issues. Because, and what we would call the tragedy of the commons, one person dumping their pollution will do no harm to the world. So is that act, and that act leaves no roshem whatsoever that anybody normally would detect, no impression. But if I do it and another person does it and another person does it, well, then that creates a problem. So the question is, how does halacha relate to that? And there is actually a, I don't know how recent the tshuva is, but it's quoted in an online article that was just published in Tradition about the COVID, about COVID vaccines and the obligation to take them. And they quoted tshuva of Usher Weiss about arguing why it's obligatory and mandatory, because while one person could not take the vaccine and it wouldn't be a problem, you'd still have herd immunity. If everybody were to choose to take that action, then it would lead to great public harm. I agree with the sentiment, but I'm not sure about how well-rooted this is in halacha. Hashkafically speaking, it's very well-rooted. It's this week's parsha, right? Chazal say that ki mala'aha aretz chamas, that the lo nischatem dinam el ala gezel, Rashi says, that the Gemara din, that the final judgment of the generation of the flood was sealed over Gezel. And the Gemara explains, the Medrash explains what was the Gezel. A man had a pile of wheat kernels, and each person would come along and take just one kernel, less than a shavaputa. But then it took only a little time before everything was gone. Right? So that is, in a certain sense, the tragedy of the commons. It's an individual action, which in itself is not harmful, but the cumulative is problematic. So when you bring it back to the question of coffee, you know, I think Marshall probably, many people start drinking coffee when they need the coffee once and need the coffee twice, and then it becomes a habit. Is it, so putting aside the question, let's assume it were truly harmful, which I don't think there's real evidence to, you know, when is the time that you're not allowed to drink the coffee? Which is the step, which is the action? And so I'm not sure, at least from a halachic perspective, that we could really easily come to grips with that question. Okay, is that long-winded answer, or we'd say in the yeshiva is a raid, at least something of a response?
It is very interesting, although obviously not to get down a rabbit hole, but obviously Bickel's tragedy of the commons is ultimately nothing, I think, more than the legal explanation of Kant's universalization principle, not to sound hoity-toity, but it's interesting because I've never before ever, I think, heard a tshuva it was specifically based on the obligation to follow the universalization principle. I'm wondering how common that is. I think that's actually quite intellectually interesting as a basis for things like the obligation to take COVID-19.
I do not know of any, I don't want to say there are no such things, but what really you're asking is, particularly a proactive action. It's one thing to say, you know, I can show you examples in halacha, in the Gemara, where certain kinds of pollution are prohibited, and it's really the accumulative effect. Nobody's allowed to do it. It's in zoning laws in the second paragraph of Basra. But the idea that I have to go and get a vaccine, you know, unless I have a compelling reason that I can't, this might be one of the, you know, you will find there is a little bit of very recent literature in the last probably 20, 30 years. I think you only find it, I think that there's some material, you can find the tshuva if you go online and Traditions on this article is by two non-rabbinic figures about the COVID vaccine and collecting the materials. They just published it online. And in the footnotes, they quote, on the article, they quote Russia Weiss, and in the footnotes, you can find this tshuva. There are other contemporary Gedolim who also, like Rav Eliashiv, who's quoted as saying something similar about not obviously COVID-19, but about the other vaccinations. I think you're only going to find this in the last 20 to 30 years at the earliest, because you have to live in a world in which there are such things like vaccines, and you also have anti-vaxxers, which is, I think, relatively, you know, the inroads into the Orthodox community are relatively recent. So you're not going to start getting any type of tshuva on this issue until recently, and it's not easy to find other examples of what I'll call the cumulative effect. But yes, it is a really, really interesting topic. Okay. So now back to our Gemara. And now we're just finishing up the material of the Mishnah. We spent a lot of time talking about when Zman Kriyat Shema Shel Shacharis is, before Netzach Hama, after Misha Yakir, during Hanetzach Hama, according to the Baal HaMor, after Hanetzach Hama, up until what point? The Gemara Mishnah quoted Rabbi Yeshua Omer Ad Shalosh Sha'os, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Halacha Rabbi Yeshua, which to me is very strange, because there are Rishonim that we learned who want to claim this is only B'di'evid. You have to say that Rabbi Yeshua's position, he only intended it B'di'evid, although when I read Mishnah, it doesn't sound like that. And in Shulchan Aruch, the Psak Halacha is that mitzvah min hamuvchar is to read Kriyashma Kivasikin. But you're Yotzei Lechatchila all the way until the end of 3 hours, because we do Paskin like Rabbi Yoshua, and in effect, even Lechatchila, despite a number of Rishonim who think it's only B'diyevet. Next, Hakorei Mikan Ve'elach Lo Hifsid. Someone who reads, let's say you miss Man Kriyashma, you missed the end of a quarter of the day comes, the end of the third Sha'azmanit passes, and you haven't read Kriyashma. So can I read Kriyashma? So the Mishnah said, Hakorei Mikan Ve'elach Lo Hifsid. If you read afterwards, there's no downside to it. So the question is, first question you want to ask is, why would I think there's a downside to it? Let's say I feel like now in the middle of Shir, you know, I'm moved. I don't want to teach Torah Shema Peh right now. I want to read Kriya Shema. Okay, so I'm a poel, so I can't be mevata my malacha. When Shir is over, 10:15 or 10:10, so I will decide I want to read Kriya Shema. Is that a problem? So it's of course it's not a problem. I can read any parashah chumash I want to read. It's not Tisha B'Av or anything. And even Tisha B'Av, you could probably read Kriya Shema. So the question is, Why does the Gemara have to tell us Hakorei Mikan Ve'elach Lo Hifsid? So there's a very, very interesting comment. Although I don't believe that we necessarily passed in this way, I may have to actually go and share. Let me share my Bar Ilan. This will be a little tricky, but let me try this anyway. And I'm going to show you a passage quoted in Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah on the Rif. Where he quotes, I'm just pulling this up. Talmud Bavli, Brachos, Yoda Beis. Let's look at the commentaries. The Rif. Then. Okay, so if you take a look, I'm just going to make this a little bigger. And Rabbeinu Yonah writes the following: Lo hifsid ko adam shekori b'torah, v'yesh lishol ma bo lahashmienu shlo hifsid ko adam shekori b'torah. V'zeh davar pashutu. You can link Kriyashma whatever you want. Maybe not for the mitzvah Kriyashma, but for mitzvah Talmud Torah. V'tireitz harav Rabbi Shlomo min haharzal, de'asa la'ashmienon. Even though you're not allowed to read Torah Shebichsav Bal Peh, Ushar Psukim, Eino Yochal Likro, and you're not allowed to, let's say 10:15 today, I want to read some Chumash. So the halacha is, he's saying, more complicated, I have to open a Chumash. So if that's the case, why? Because I'm not allowed to read Chumash Bal Peh. Even though I know Parshas Lech Lecha, still I have to open a Chumash to read it. Afilu Hachi, Kriyashma Yocho Likrosa Alpe. Fi Afalpisha in a Kore Oso Lashem Chova. So Kriyashma, so when I read Kriyashma after the third hour of the day, I'm not actually being Yotze Mitzvah Kriyashma. So what am I doing? I'm just learning Chumash. It's a Mitzvah Talmud Torah. So if Afalpisha in a Kore Oso Lashem Chova, the Chavan Shinit Lala Omra Alpe Lachova Yocho La Omra Afilu Shalo Lachova Kola Pa'amim Sheyirza. So he says that once you're allowed to read it as for your obligation of Kriya Shema Bal Peh, clearly, there's no way. Now, how do you know that you're allowed to read Kriya Shema Bal Peh when you're Yotzei Kriya Shema? Maybe you're obligated to read it out of a sitter, or out of a chumash. The answer, I think, is simple.
Because you can do it in bed at night.
Maybe you have your book next to you with a headlamp. But you're
in. Close your eyes when you say it.
That your answer is fundamentally correct. People didn't have printed texts. What every person, when they were going to read Kriyashma, Shoshach, Shoshavis, went to shul, took out a Sefer Torah, had their own Sefer Torah, and read it out of that? And could you imagine you read Kriyashma, now you have to read Vayim Shema, so you have to roll. But that's okay, that's not too far. That's not about a Persha. But now you have to read Persha Tzitzis, so you're going to roll back to Shlach every single day, twice a day? That's ridiculous. Obviously, when the Torah said you read Kriyashma Be'al Peh. So therefore, he says that reading Kriya Shema the rest of the day is just like reading Kriya Shema for the mitzvah. You don't need to have a text in front of you. And he says, "Umizeh atam iskinu lomar parshas karbanos al peh b'chol yom b'mnei shichova, kida amrinan b'medrash." Amar Avram Avinu, Bame Idaki Rashena, Kolmar Be'ezes, Chus Yekayimu Lehem Haftachosecha. Avram Avinu asked God, it's this week's parsha, how do I know I will inherit it? And Chas V'Shalom, Avram Avinu wasn't Mechusre Amana, he didn't lack faith, but he wanted to know what merit. So he said, Amar Lo Bischusa Karbano, Shenemar Chali Aglam Meshulashas. Then Avram said, "Tenach bisman shebeis hamikdash kaim." That works when there's a temple. Bisman shebeis hamikdash kaim. How do you bring karbanos? So God says, "Yomru lefanai parshas hakarbanos umala ni aleim ki ilubano beis hamikdash v'ekriv olav karban mizat." So mizatam nami omrim baharbe mekomos parshas birchas kohanim dechivan shechova lomer b'chol yom birchas kohanim al peh b'shas nesiyas kapayim yachala omra afila shelo b'makom chova. So basically, the theory that Rabbi Shlomo Menahar advances, which I do not think is the way we accept this, the halacha, but not for the reasons he's positing, is that anytime you're obligated to read something as part of a recitation, there's no prohibition of reciting about pe. And that's probably true because it's impossible otherwise. Now, the truth is, this can't be fully true anyway, because if you were to take this reductio ad absurdum, you're obligated to read Kriyas HaTorah. Can you read that bal peh? And the answer is obviously not. But anyway, so this is how he wants to explain. The Gemara is commenting, the Mishnah is saying that if you read it afterwards, it's lo hifsid ka'adam akar betorah. Of course, you're allowed to learn Torah anytime you're not doing, you know, it's not davening time. What would the issue be? The issue, he says, that is with reading bal peh. This you're allowed to read bal peh, according to Rabbi Shlomo Nahar. If you were just reading Chumash generally for the mitzvah Talmud Torah, you would not be able to do so. Okay. Yes.
My apologies for being quite so interactive today. So you're on a hiking trip. You don't bring a chumash, you forget. You're with someone who actually knows can learn all the parsha by heart. Is it literally better not to hear the parsha than to have him chant it for you because you don't have a chumash with you?
Are you talking about Kriyas HaTorah here?
This week's parsha, whatever example you want to use.
So if I want to go to the other extreme, there's a very famous tshuva of the Rambam that I'm sure we've mentioned in a couple of special shirim that I've given. The Rambam says that if you don't have a kosher sefer Torah, you can read from a chumash, which means a single Torah and single chumash in a scroll, like a sefer Torah, which you're normally not allowed to read b'tzibur me'kavar atzibur, but if you have no choice, you read from that. And he says, if you don't have a chumash, you can read from a pasul sefer Torah. And the Rambam says, if you don't have a pasul sefer Torah, you can read be'al peh with brachos. You can have shiva kurim. That's, of course, assuming you have seven people who actually know the parsha bal peh. So the answer is, if you asked me, if you're on a hiking trip and somebody knows the parsha bal peh, we don't follow the Rambam that far. We might make a brachos on a pasul sefer Torah, maybe. The Rambam quotes it as an opinion in Shulchan Aruch, but we do not read Kriya Shema. We do not read Kriya HaTorah bal peh and make brachos. But could you, in fact, read a bal peh if somebody knew it, just at least to fulfill it according to the Rambam without brachos? I think so. It's probably a rare occurrence, but nonetheless, I think in theory I would say yes.
We don't hold from this at all nowadays, basically. Right. We say things via pe all the time that are written in the Torah.
Well, what kinds of things, Larry?
Songs.
Yeah. So, well, I don't think.
And you can't learn out loud and give a shiur and quote a pasuk. I mean, without the chumash. I mean, it's absurd.
Agreed. So this is not
the Shabbos table.
This, yeah, exactly. Same thing.
You just wouldn't quote the pasuk, or you would do. You know, you don't quote only two words. So the truth is,
yes, the whole pasuk. You can't say part of the pasuk.
No, only if you have the Shema Hashem in it, and only if you're an Ashkenazi. Sfaradim have no such compunctions. We accept this psak in terms of Kriya Shema, in terms of the Karbanos and Berachas Kohanim, but not for the reasons that he offers, actually. Another time we can have a shiur on this issue. This din of Dvarim Shebal Peh, Iyatah Rashai Lekosom, and Dvarim Shebechsav, Iyatah Rashai L'Omrah Peh, that you can't write down Torah Shebechsav, which we obviously do all the time, it's all we do, and that you can't recite Torah Shebechsav Bal Peh. It's a very interesting din. The Rambam quotes it nowhere in the Mishnah Torah. Nowhere. And in Shulchan Aruch, I believe the only part that's discussed is this side, which is reciting Torah Shebechsav be'al peh. The other side has long time ago been abolished. So it's not even clear what the actual origin of the din is and whether this is really a din d'oraisa or not. So it's a topic for another time. Okay. So anyway, but it is certainly a very interesting idea. So now the Gemara talks about the part that's actually very much halacha lemaisa, which is I miss my Kriya Shema, but I'm going to read Kriya Shema afterwards. Can I say Birchos Kriya Shema? So the Gemara first begins by quoting Amar Rav Chista, Amar Mar Ukva, Uvavad Shelo Yomar Yotzer Or. You're not, once the Zman Kriya Shema has passed, you're not allowed to say Yotzer Or, which means specifically the Brach of Yotzer Or. I presume that the reason is Rashi and Tosis don't explain anything. I presume the reason why he said you're not allowed to say Yotzer Or is because Yotzer Or is of the two brachos that precede Kriya Shema, and of all the brachos of Kriya Shema, Yotzer Or is the one bracha that is related specifically to the time of day. We have Yotzer Or in Shachris, and we have Amar of Aravim in Arvis, and those two brachos really relate to the time of day. The next bracha, meaning the second bracha before Kriya Shema, Ava Rab for Ashkenazim, Ava Rabba in the morning, and Ava Solam at night, have nothing to do with the time of day. They're basically Birchas HaTorah. In fact, so much so that if you didn't say Birchas HaTorah in the morning, and then you said Ava Rabba and you said Kriya Shema, you don't make Birchas HaTorah later because you're Yotzei with Ava Rabba. So, and the brachos that are after Kriya Shema relate to at least the first bracha afterwards, and the only one in the morning and the first one at night have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim. Hashkivenu is its own parsha. So, although we have seen that Hashkivenu might also be time limited. If you remember, the Gemara on the top of Tesamer Aleph said, if you're reading Kriya Shema Shel Arbis very late, like after daybreak, after daybreak or right before sunrise, then you don't say Hashkivenu. By the same token, Rav Chista says here, once your Zman Kriya Shema has gone past the third hour of the day, you can no longer say Yotzer Or. Yotzer Or has to be close enough to the time that light shines upon the earth for the first time during the day. So that's what he says, that even though you can read Kriya Shema afterwards, Uvad Shelo Yomer Yotzer. Now that does imply, by the way, that you can say Ava Rabba, which is not surprising because that's kind of a Birchas HaTorah. Now, the Gemara says, Meisve, we have a problem with the statement. HaKori Mikan Ve'elach Lo Hifsid Ka'adam Shukori BaTorah, Aho Mevarech Hushtayim Lefaneha, even if you miss Man Kriya Shema, and you're not Yotzei Kriya Shema either mid Rabbanan or mid Daraisa, which is probably a Machlokas or Rishonim, you're still able to make brachos. So the Gemara says, Tiyufta the Rav Chista Tiyufta. Clearly, Rav Chista is wrong. You can say Yotzer Or as well. It's not time bound. You know what Yotzer Or is? Yotzer Or is a Birchas HaShevach. It's in praise of God, but it's not necessarily tied to having to be recited at a particular time of day. Then the Gemara says, Ika da Amre, Amar Rav Chista, Amar Mar Ukva, Milo Hifsid, Shelo Hifsid Brachos. That they now quote Rav Chista and Mar Ukva saying the exact opposite, that you don't lose any of the Brachos. And now that very Braisa that in the first version served to undermine Rav Chista now becomes the proof. Tanya Nami Hachi, Hakore Mikan Ve'elach, Lo Hifsid Ka'adam Shekore B'Torah, Al Vavaruch Ushtayim Lefaneha Va'achas Lachareha. Okay. So he says that, and this is the maskana, that even if you miss the man Kriya Shema, you're able to make Birchas Kriya Shema afterwards. However, there is an important caveat here. The Rush, I guess I'll share the Rush. So let's go back to my Bar Ilan. The Rush here. The Rush writes the following: Hakori mikan ve'elach, lo hifsid ka'adam shekori b'Torah. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Mar Ukva, my lo hifsid, lo hifsid abrachos. Tanya nami hachi, etc. Now the Rush writes: Yesh li stopik im ritzono lomar ad chatzos kitshir tefila aliba the rabbana. When we say Hakori mikan ve'elach, it can still make a birchas Kriya Shema. Is that only until Chatzos, meaning when you can daven Shachris, you can still say Birchas Kriya Shema? Oh, Adalit Shaos, Aliba the Rabbi Yehuda. Or maybe only till the end of the fourth hour, you get 1 hour more afterwards because Rabbi Yehuda holds that's the end of Zman Kriya Shema. Oh, Afilu Kola Yom Kula, Lohifsid. Or You can say Kriya Shema with its brachos all day, before Mincha, after Mincha, as long as night hasn't come. The Rush says, so he's not sure. It's not clear from the Gemara. Lo Hifsid, you have all day, or you only have a little longer. Rav Haigon Zal Kosav, Av Kol Shal Revius, Av Alpish Eno Nasa, Mevarech Shtayim Lefanash Ba'achas Lachara. So Rav Haigon says that for the entire fourth hour, even though it's not Zman Kriya Shema, you can make brachos before and after. Mashma, Dafka Shal Revius, Shuzman Tfilah L'Rabbi Yehuda. It sounds from Haigon that it's only during the fourth hour, which is Zman Tfilah for Rabbi Yehuda, which is what we generally hold of. Avo Mikan Ve'elach Hifsid Abrachos. After that, you can't make it. The brachos, you've lost the opportunity. Ve'imbirech over alosisa. And if you make the bracha, you considered being motzi shem shemaim levatala because you're making a bracha you're not obligated or allowed to make. The truth is, Rav Haigon's position, Rav Haigon's the quotation, is not 100%, doesn't prove the point 100%. Rav Haigon may simply state the fourth hour because that's the zman that you have tefillah and you might have smicha skula tefillah. But it might very well be that Rav Haigon would agree that if somehow not only did you miss Zman Kriya Shema, you miss Zman Tefillah, maybe you could still say Kriya Shema in Birchos Sehel. The Rambam happens to Paskin that you can say Birchos Kriya Shema all day. All day. And the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch, however, Paskins only until the end of the fourth hour, like the Rush says here. The Mishnah Brura does quote those who disagree and say that you can read Birchos Kriya Shema. You can say Birchos Kriya Shema until Chatzos. Not like the Rambam until the end of the day, but until Chatzos, which is the Zman Tefillah of the Chachamim. Interestingly enough here, the Aruch HaShulchan doesn't quote any such opinion. The Aruch HaShulchan says, you can, like the Shulchan Aruch, you can only say it until the end of the fourth hour. So right here, we have an example where the Aruch HaShulchan is very clearly Machmir, and the Mishnah Brura leans to being Mekel, to being lenient, which really goes back to the point that I made earlier, that it's not always, it's not as one-sided as people make it. I think the reason why the Aruch HaShulchan probably simply sticks to the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch here is because there was no Minhag Yisrael to say the Birchos Kriya Shema up until Chatzos, because you can't talk about Minhag with respect to something that is not a regular occurrence. Right? Minhag means look and see what the practice is. Now, it's not impossible in this case to have a Minhag, but because it's not common, people wait till afterwards, have delayed till afterwards, and not everybody anyway, if they delay till afterwards, wants to ask a shayla because they may be embarrassed. So you can't talk about the Minhag Yisrael is to make Birchos Kriya Shema until all day, or until Chatzos, or until the end of the fourth hour. So all you're left with is what do you think is the most textually plausible argument? And the Aruch HaShulchan here is following the Shulchan Aruch that it says until the end of the fourth hour. So that, in fact, I think is the practice. That even though, and this is important in the context of a shul, because there are times of year where a 9 o'clock start to davening is too late for Birchos Kriya Shema. So we tell people, say Kriya Shema before, and that's fine. But you still have to make sure, both because of Zman Tefillah and because of the Birchos of Kriya Shema, you still have to make sure that everything is going to be finished within one more hour of the day. Okay. So we'll stop here, and next week. Oh, so let me just read the last statement in the Gemara, which is Amar of Mani Gadol Akori Kriya Shema Bonasa Yoser Me Osek BaTorah Midikani Akori Mikam VeElach Lo Hifsid Katan Akar BaTorah. So if you say that someone who reads Kriya Shema after this man, it's not the end of the world. Lo Hifsid, he's no less than someone who's Kari BaTorah. So you see that reading Kriya Shema Bismana is better than even being Kari BaTorah. Michlal the Korei Beonasa Adif. Right? Okay, in other words, if you read Kriya Shema Bismana, that's great. If you read Shal Bismana, it's not the end of the world. It's still something. So the Gemara says you see that reading Kriya Shema Bismana is greater than someone who is Osek BaTorah. Okay, any questions?
Rabbi Weir, yes. I want to know exactly where we are now for next week.
The Mishnah on the bottom of Yud Amid Beis.
Yud Amid Beis.
Yes, the fourth line from the bottom.
Oh, Vav. It says Vav.
Shkolach, very good.
Beit Shammai Omrim. Is that where we are?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
Any other questions?
I have a comment. Yes. I think that the origin and the strength of the Yotzer Or and then the Ava Rabbah is because they are the two proofs of God's existence that we have. And they were talking in general terms. And this is why the Rambam is Mekel there. because Yotzer Or is science. That's exactly what he did. And Ava Rabba, that's Amuna. That fits the second thing. And the two together.
The God of Revelation.
And the two together therefore have a special relationship. And that with Krishna. I wrote it once.
Very good.
In my good days.
Well, I think that's excellent.
Yes,
two elements of God in the world.
Very good.
Okay. Shakar to everybody.
Thank you.
Have a great week.